Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Deutsche Börse AG conference call regarding the Q2 2010 results. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now hand the floor over to your host, Mr. Erik Müller.
Thank you very much, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today to go through Deutsche Börse's second quarter 2010 results. With me is Gregor Pottmeyer, Chief Financial Officer. Gregor will take you through our results presentation, and after the presentation, we'll be very happy to take your questions. The presentation materials for this call have been sent out via email earlier today and can also be downloaded from the Investor Relations section of our website. As usual, this conference call will be recorded and is available for replay. Let me now hand it over to you, Gregor.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's call. During this presentation, I will explain our financial performance in the second quarter of 2010, including volume trends, and give you a brief update on our strategic priorities. Let me start with a short overview of the results in the second quarter. Due to the recovery of the global economy compared to 2009, and the strong increase in volatility, sales revenue in the second quarter increased 9%, both year over year and sequentially. Total costs in the second quarter decreased 12% compared to the second quarter 2009, if adjusted for €82 million restructuring expenses. Adjusted for restructuring expenses, EBIT in the second quarter amounted to €338.4 million, a significant increase compared to the last six quarters. Basic earnings per share in the second quarter, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to €1.19. Compared to the second quarter 2009, this is an increase of 34%. Due to lower than budgeted volume-related and operating costs, we expect to end the year below our guidance for total costs of €1,210 million in 2010, excluding restructuring expenses. Overall, this set of results is further proof of our strong cash flow generation ability. In addition, we continue to consider our capital position as sound as a consequence of sequential sales revenue improvement paired with our continued focus on cost control. The interest cover ratio, an important metric for the excellent credit rating profile of Deutsche Börse AG, stood well above our minimum requirement of 16 times in the second quarter and amounted to 20.2 times. Turning to page 2, you can see that the sales revenue of the group in the second quarter have increased sequentially for the third consecutive quarter, while costs adjusted for restructuring expenses, are significantly below last year's level and in line with the first quarter 2010. As a result, we saw a significant increase of earnings per share when adjusting for restructuring expenses. I would now like to turn to the details of the results in the second quarter on page 3. Sales revenue increased 9% compared to the first quarter to €564.4 million. Net interest income amounted to €15.7 million in the second quarter. The increase of 43% against the first quarter 2010 is largely due to an increase in customer cash balances to 7 billion euro on average, and a small increase of interest rates in money markets. The other operating income in the second quarter amounted to 24.6 million euro, compared to 12.5 million euro in the first quarter. The increase is mainly due to maturity adjustments of the own funds portfolio at Clearstream that resulted in a gain of 8.4 million euro. Cost for the group, adjusted for 82 million euro restructuring expenses, declined to 274 million euro, 12% below the second quarter 2009 and in line with the first quarter 2010. Of total costs, volume-related costs amounted to 51.4 million euro, and operating costs, excluding restructuring expenses, amounted to 222.6 million euro. The decline of the volume-related costs against the first quarter 2010 is mainly due to further optimization of the fees and commission expenses from the banking business in the context of our cost efficiency measures. While operating costs were broadly stable against the first quarter 2010, they were significantly below the level in the second quarter 2009. On the one hand, this is due to a partial release of provisions in the second quarter 2010 in connection with our move to Eschborn. The provisions were created in 2009, but due to a tight management of the process, costs will be lower than initially expected. On the other hand, the elimination of the own expenses capitalized since 1st January 2010, the lower regular amortization of intangibles in the context of ISE, as well as measures under our ongoing efficiency programs contributed to the decline of operating costs. The result from equity investments in the second quarter amounted to 8.7 million euro. The increase compared to 1.7 million euro booked in the first quarter is mainly due to the fact that business activity in the second quarter also developed very favorable at the main minority holdings, which contribute to the result from equity investments, Scotch Holding SA, Direct Edge Holding LLC, and European Energy Exchange AG. EBIT in the second quarter, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 338.4 million euro, a significant increase compared to the preceding quarters. The net financial result in the second quarter includes financial expenses of around 5 million euro relating to the partial redemption of our hybrid bond. Until 30 June 2010, we have in total bought back 90 million euro of our hybrid bond opportunistically at market from sellers who approached us with larger blocks. Our appetite for these sorts of transaction is obviously reducing with the interest cover improvements seen in the first half of 2010. Net income, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 219.9 million euro. Finally, the adjusted earnings per share in the second quarter stood at 1.19 euro. I would now like to turn to the individual business segments, starting with the Xetra segment on page 4. The further improvement of the economic environment and the increase of equity market volatility had a positive effect on volumes in our cash market. The order book volume on the electronic trading system Xetra saw an increase of 43% compared to the prior year, and the volumes on the Frankfurt trading floor increased 9%. Moving on to the financials of the Xetra segment on page 5. Adjusted for the deconsolidation of Scotch at the end of 2009, Xetra sales revenue in the second quarter increased significantly year over year and quarter over quarter to 70.8 million euro. The Scotch contribution since the first quarter 2010 is included in the result from equity investments in the Xetra segment. The sales revenue in basis points of the order book volume for trading on Xetra and clearing declined slightly, reflecting higher volumes and thus higher average rebates as part of our algorithmic trading incentives. EBIT for the segment, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 42.2 million euro, an increase of more than 50% compared to the second quarter 2009. Turning to the volume development of Eurex on page 6. The total number of traded contracts in the second quarter 2010 increased by 17% year over year to 834 million, the highest quarterly level ever in derivatives at Deutsche Börse Group. The increase is due to A, higher equity market volatility and underlying cash equity volumes in the second quarter. B, continuing growth in fixed income derivatives volumes compared to 2009, in the light of speculation around inflation and potential changes of long-term interest rates. And C, a further increase of block trading activity in single equity derivatives in the context of the German dividend season. With regards to the U.S. options traded on the International Security Exchange, the number of contracts traded declined 21% year over year in the second quarter as a result of a continued highly competitive environment. In addition to the drivers we discussed during the first quarter call, a pricing change at the Philadelphia Exchange from Nasdaq OMX resulted in further small shift of market share away from ISE. Philadelphia Exchange introduced a new type of pricing that successfully increased market share, maker-taker pricing combined with pro-rata customer priority exchange. As a response, ISE implemented an enhanced version of a maker-taker pricing for certain products, and the initial results are promising. On average, the market share of ISE in equity options stood at 21% in the second quarter. Sales revenue at the Eurex segment, shown on page 7, amounted to 246.1 million euro in the second quarter 2010. Compared to the same period in 2009, this is an increase of 17%. And compared to the preceding quarters, sales revenue increased by 15%. Revenues per contract stood at 25 euro cent in the second quarter. The decrease compared to the first quarter is due to the higher share of single equity products. Revenue per contract for index and fixed income derivatives have remained stable and revenues per contract for U.S. options have improved slightly, even if adjusted for the stronger U.S. dollar. Adjusted for restructuring expenses, the EBIT for the segment stood at €156.9 million, which is the highest quarterly level since the first quarter 2008. I am now turning to page 8, which shows the development of the settlement and custody activity in the Clearstream segment. The average value of securities held in custody in the first quarter increased by 7% year over year to €10.9 trillion, resulting in the strongest quarter ever for our safekeeping operations. The rise is due to higher equity market valuations in the domestic market, as well as higher levels of bonds under custody in our international market. The number of settlement transactions rose by 21% compared to the second quarter 2009 to 30.7 million due to an increase in both domestic as well as international transactions. Compared to the first quarter 2010, the custody business saw an increase of 2%, while the settlement activity saw 10% growth. Moving on to the development of financials in the Clearstream segment on page 9. Custody sales revenue increased by 4% year over year to €114 million. The difference to the growth of the business activity is due to changes in product mix and consolidation of customers. Merged entities regularly fall into higher volume thresholds in the fee schedules, which slightly decreases average margins. As a result of a fee reduction for settlement of German securities, which took effect on 1st July 2009, combined with a change of the product mix that saw a higher share of lower price international transactions, settlement sales revenue increased by only 5% year over year to €31.3 million. GSF outstandings in the second quarter increased 5% to €509 billion. As a result of an increase of market prices for securities held as collateral, which drive Clearstream sales revenue in this business area, GSF sales revenue increased 8% to €18.1 million. Net interest income from banking business stood at €15.7 million in the second quarter. As mentioned earlier, the increase against the first quarter is due to higher cash balances paired with slightly higher market rates. Cash balances in the second quarter 2010 were €7 billion, compared to €5.9 billion in the first quarter 2010. In total, revenues of the Clearstream segment amounted to €207.6 million, a decrease against the second quarter 2009 of 2%, due to lower net interest income, but an increase of 4% against the first quarter this year. EBIT in the Clearstream segment, adjusted for restructuring charges, amounted to €105.7 million. Moving on to page 10 and the market data and analytics segment. Sales revenue in the second quarter increased by 19% to €55.6 million. The main driver for the revenue increase was the full consolidation of stocks since the first quarter 2010. Adjusted for consolidation effects, sales revenue of the segment increased by 2%. The EBIT in the market data and analytics segment, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 33.6 million euro. In order to focus the segment's activity on tradable information, we sold our 77% interest in the reference data business Evox earlier this month. The transaction resulted in a book gain amounting to a single-digit million euro amount, which will be reflected in the third quarter results. Let me now turn to page 11 and subsequent pages to talk about our continued focus on growth initiatives and operating efficiency while maintaining our strong financial position. First, we remain focused on growth opportunities within each of our business segments. Second, we will continue to work on further improving our operating efficiency, in particular, strict cost discipline and tax efficiency. Third, in the context of capital management, we will continue to focus on retaining our strong financial position and our excellent credit rating profile. Slide 12 gives you an overview of how we allocate our 2010 investment budget for organic growth initiatives. We plan to spend some 80% in the two largest segments of our business, Eurex and Clearstream. Eurex, as our historically fastest growing business, invests some 50% of the total budget. Clearstream some 30%. In total, we have structured our growth initiatives along the following three dimensions. First, we intend to achieve growth by launching new products in existing and new asset classes. Second, we want to achieve growth by expanding our business to serve new customer groups. And third, we plan to achieve growth by penetrating markets in new regions, leveraging structural growth trends in the process. In the first half of 2010, we have so far expensed only around 38% of the total budget, but expect to see a catch-up in the second half of 2010. On the growth side, we see some of our new products and services gaining traction. On Eurex, open interest in dividend index derivatives exceeded 1 million contracts in July, while the contract volume of 1.2 million in the second quarter was still relatively small. The higher fee per contract for those products has resulted in an increase of the revenues per contract for index derivatives in general. On Xetra, ETFs have grown consistently throughout the crisis, reaching 135 billion euro of assets under management and 47 billion euro order book volume in the second quarter. Gold has also been a nice success, with now over 50 tons stored in our vault. At Clearstream, GSF outstandings continue to grow nicely. Outstandings for our second money market alternative, GC Pooling, have exceeded 90 billion euro in the second quarter, an increase of 20% against same period last year. Finally, market data and analytics has launched several new products targeting buy-side clients such as Algo News feeds through Market News International and Need to Know News. On page 13, I would like to update you on the group's operating efficiency measures. In total, the initiated measures are expected to lead to cost savings totaling around 150 million euro per year from 2013 onwards. Because of progress we have achieved in the project, the expenses for restructuring measures have become more concrete. They will amount to less than 200 million euro, which is around 40 million euro below the original guidance. In the first two quarters this year, we have already booked 109.8 million euro out of the 200 million euro. Based on the excellent cost performance in half year 1, 2010, we expect to end the full year below our guidance for total cost of 1,210 million, which excludes restructuring expenses. However, due to the fact that we had some tailwind in the first half of 2010 from certain cost items, e.g. release of provisions from the move to Eschborn, and given that we expect an increase of cost in the second half of 2010 due to some backloading on the expenses for growth initiatives and the usually observed year-end cost step-up, I caution you not to simply extrapolate cost of the first half 2010. I anticipate to provide more detail on expected full year 2010 cost performance with the release of our third quarter results. In the context of the capital management policy shown on page 14, we will continue to focus on retaining our strong financial position and our excellent credit rating profile. We consider our capital position as sound and do not expect a significant change in capital requirements in the foreseeable future, given that we are largely operating a transaction-based business model. We continue to position ourselves appropriately flexible, not only on the cost side, but also regarding our liquidity management, distribution policy, and capital structure. It's our duty to ensure the stability and success of Deutsche Börse Group, regardless of market volatility and anomalies in capital markets. As communicated earlier in the year, we do not envisage to buy back own shares in 2010 in light of continued uncertainty with regards to the development of global financial markets. Continuing past practice, our commitments to distributions, however, remain unchanged. Our capital management policy foresees the distribution of funds not required for the group's operating business and further development to its shareholders. So let me summarize. Business activity since the start of the year has improved based on a more favorable economic development. Furthermore, the spike in volatility in the second quarter has resulted in record volumes in May 2010. Costs, if adjusted for restructuring expenses, are well under control, and we expect to end the year below our cost guidance of 1.21 billion euro. While volumes in July have decreased against the levels seen in the second quarter, we still see year-over-year growth in most areas of the business. With our continued focus on growth initiatives and operating efficiency, while maintaining our strong financial position, we are well positioned to benefit from cyclical and structural drivers. With this, I conclude my presentation. We are now happy to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9* on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel your question, press 9* again. And the first question comes from Bruce Hamilton from Morgan Stanley UK. May we have your question, please?
Afternoon. Thanks, guys, for the detail. Two quick ones. On your sort of capital management, I take the, you know, the message on clearly, you know, being focused on retaining the AA rating, etc. In view of the fact that your sort of interest cover now looks a bit more comfortable, is there any update on when, you know, when we might see further capital returns, buyback or other? Is there a set sort of coverage level you'd like to achieve, or how should we think about that? And then secondly, I hear what you're saying, that we'll get a bit more cost guidance for the year in the Q3s, but I just wanted to check that the 945 million of maximum operating costs you've put in page 11, what was that prior to this quarter? Is that changed materially? I don't have the previous data. Thank you.
With regard to your questions to the capital management, yes, we saw an increase in our interest cover ratio to 20.2 in this quarter. But with regard to our capital management policy, so there is no change. So we keep our dividend policy where we say 40 to 60% of our net income will be paid as a dividend. And as I mentioned, we are still open to do further on our distribution policy. And so far, it's not envisaged to do share buybacks this year, but for 2011, no decisions are done so far. With regard to your question, with regard to the operating costs, so basically, the most important impact is the partial release of provisions with the move to Eschborn. So we had some provisions built in Q2 2009 and also in Q4 2009. And when we look at this now, due to our cost management, we saw that there is that we do not need the full provision. So we released some of this. So that is the biggest part of the reduction of the operating cost. Another important topic is that, as we did the ISE impairment last year by $600 million, so we see now also lower regular amortization rate on this side. So it's basically $20 million in a year. So in a quarter, you see $5 million less depreciation. And thirdly, our cost efficiency measures are the third reasons why we were able to reduce the operating cost compared to last year, quarter two.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Jillian Miller from BMO Capital Markets US. May we have your question, please?
Thank you. I had a couple numbers questions. If you could just go into more detail on what drove the sequential decline in volume-related costs. You mentioned reducing expenses from the banking business, but if you could just explain where the savings came from more specifically, and maybe quantify how much of the change in the line item related to that specific cost saving. And then related to that, I'm wondering if it's fair to say that the 2Q level marks a new run rate ratio for the volume-related cost as a percentage of Clearstream revenues. Thanks.
So we saw a decline in the volume-related cost when we take the comparison to the last year quarter from 62.6 million euro to 51.4 million euro. And the reasons are, first, the deconsolidation of Coach. So there was a bigger part of the volume-related cost in. Secondly, the second reason is the consolidation of stocks, because earlier we had volume-related costs as it was not consolidated, the stocks company. Now it's consolidated, and therefore we see a reduction on the volume-related cost side. And thirdly, the third reason is Clearstream, basically, where we were able, out of our cost efficiency measures, to reduce the commission expenses out of the banking business. Basically, the Clearstream cost is a waste of majority of the volume-related cost. So also in the second quarter, it was more than 75% of the total cost volumes. But these are basically the three reasons for the reduced volume-related cost compared to Q2 2009.
Okay, thanks. And then just a second question. The Clearstream cash balances increased, I guess, over 20% sequentially, and they were quite a bit higher than we were expecting. And I was curious what the reason is for the strong growth, whether it was just the uncertainty in the markets, with some of the specific issues that were going on in the second quarter, or whether you did something else separately to attract deposits?
Yeah, the general philosophy here is not to attract deposits. The reason why customers leave cash with us is a transactional background. So in anticipation of transactions that customers like to execute at Clearstream, they would place cash with us to make sure there are no settlement failures, which can be costly, obviously, from a back office perspective for all participants. So that's the reason why people place cash with us. There is a transactional element, and SQ2 also saw a lot of activity, not only on our cash and derivatives markets, but also on the Clearstream side. It would be natural that the cash balances also go up. Of course, there has been throughout the, let's say, financial crisis, been also an element of Clearstream being a safe haven, really. If you look at the rating profile, if you look at the business model of Clearstream, customers very much like the fact that you have here a transaction, let's say, enabler without the usual balance sheet risk of a bank.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Daniel Jarrett from Barclays Capital UK. May you have your question, please?
Yes, good afternoon. Daniel Garrett from Barclays here. A couple of quick questions, if I may. Just wanted to touch again on the detail you'd given about the renegotiation of the service agreements at Clearstream. I wanted to know whether there was any element of that cost saving there that was in your outlined 150 million of cost rationalization program that you detailed in February, March, i.e. what you were anticipating saving 2011 to 13, is any of that becoming more front-loaded and you're actually saving it in 2010? And if that's the case, you know, how much of that of the 150 has been front-loaded in that way? Secondly, the commercial paper balance that was in your previously in your sort of net debt position, I seem to remember that you having sort of paid most of that back at the first quarter. Could you give an update on that balance? Because obviously that sort of impacts your interest coverage ratio as well. And perhaps one last one. I missed the sort of detail where you were giving color on why it was that the Eurex index, equity index rate per contract had gone up. I was wondering if you could provide a bit more color on that, your views on sustainability of that higher RPC. Thank you.
So with regard to your first question, yes, this reinitiation of the Clearstream area is also part of the 150 million euro cost-saving part. So some of them is also this volume-related cost where we see some savings. And we see also some benefits already in 2010 out of this. I will give you an update in the third quarter in information. What exactly do we expect out of the cost savings in 2010, and what are the different positions behind this? With regard to the CP,
second question was on commercial paper balance. That's been 100 million at quarter end 2010, so lower than previous year, and that compares to zero at the end of Q1 this year. Third question had to do with the RPC in the equity index business. There, Gregor mentioned that we are having a nice success with our dividend index derivatives, which had been newly introduced, and it's a small number. Index derivatives saw 1.2 million contracts in the second quarter, but that obviously comes from a very low base, so that grows nicely and has a higher, RPC than the traditional index business, if you will. So over time, as this business becomes even more important, that will further stabilize our RPC, which historically have been stable, but obviously as volumes grow, there is an element of volume rebates also in that part of the business, and this part is now balanced with the index derivatives in the dividend field. So that's the background.
Have you detailed the sort of cents per contract charge on those DV contracts?
So we haven't yet split out in our volume count these contracts, but that's something that we will think about going forward as this becomes a more material part of the business, yes.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Andrew Mitchell from Macquarie UK. May we have your question, please?
Yes, thank you. Three questions. One, I notice you still have the OTC clearing opportunity on the list of potential new development areas. I'm just wondering if there's any change in that area and whether there's any detail on new product offerings at this point. Secondly, as to whether acquisitions, which is still the gain listed as a possibility, whether that's any more of a live issue currently in order maybe to add new product areas like the new service that new services that you've added. And then finally, on Clearstream at the Investor Day, you talked then, it's not long ago, I know, but you talked then about market share gain. I just wondered whether you can indicate whether that sort of process has continued.
Okay, with regard to the OTC clearing, so far there is nothing really new compared to our Investor Day statements. So we are in close discussions with our key customers on this topic. We finally have to see what will come out of the regulations and discussions we have currently in Europe. And so far, we are interested to go in this business, but currently there's no breakthrough and nothing new compared to the Investor Day information. With regard to acquisitions or our M&A strategy, So in general, as I mentioned, we regard organic growth, operational efficiency, and capital management as our key priorities. And we also pay close attention to the changes in the exchange industry landscape. Basically, organic growth, that's our first priority, but it can be complemented by external growth options if they make sense from a shareholder perspective as well as from our customer's perspective and for the company overall.
Clearstream market share, obviously here we are all suffering from the fact that our peers are not, exchange listed, and therefore the amount of disclosure doesn't allow us to compare or publish numbers on a quarterly basis. But we have the indication from our colleagues at Clearstream that the trend we've outlined at our Investor Day and that we've been seeing over the last couple of years already of successive market share gains compared to our peers in this field is continuing. Let's say, a gradual process, but one that's consistent.
Okay, many thanks.
The next question comes from Johannes Thormann from HSBC Germany. May we have your question, please?
Good afternoon, everybody. Johannes Thormann, HSBC. Three questions, if I may. Two short ones. First, on the AVOX sale, could you specify in which segment the gains will be booked? And secondly, on the hybrid bond, you said you bought back 90 million, so we have 460 million outstanding. And what were the interest costs in this quarter, please? And last but not least, more philosophical question. Do you have a feeling what is a recurring or sustainable level of trading activity on Eurex, the level we are seeing today, or do you have a feeling that this is even lower? Thank you.
I will start with your third question, so the sustainability of our derivative volumes. We have seen the record volumes in May, and we saw already in June some decrease, and we do not expect that we see the May volumes now in the second half year. When we look at our July volumes, then we see on the Eurex side compared to July 2009 an increase of 8% in our volumes, especially on the equity side. With regard to the ISE contracts, we still see a decline compared to previous year July by basically one-third. So you see, in general, on the Eurex side, without the ISE segment, positive development compared to last year, but compared to the Q2 numbers, it's a decrease. And currently, it's hard to judge whether we see such a volatility also within the next month. Currently, we do not expect such high volumes as we have seen in May.
On the question with regards to our long-term debt outstanding and the hybrid in particular, the interest expense in the second quarter, the total was 18.3 million euros, and the hybrid accounted for 4.6 million euros. And that is, just for the benefit of everyone on the call, obviously half of the coupon here, because we get a 50% equity credit for the purpose of calculating interest cover. So 4.6 million euro is the number that goes into this interest cover calculation in the second quarter. The first question, Gregor, was with regards to the AVOX. Where will this appear? That's the MD&A segment. I think those were the three questions.
Yeah, Thanks. Probably just to specify again, you mentioned some special interest costs for the hybrid bond recall or buyback.
Okay. So 4.6 million is the interest expense that goes into the calculation of interest. Just to be clear, you are absolutely right. The buyback that we've done, the hybrid buyback, that appears in the financial result as a premium that we paid. So we paid the market price, but obviously that market price was above par. So there's a 5 million euro, if you will, exceptional one-off item, so something that's reflected in the P&L, in particular in the financial result due to that buyback.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Chris Turner from Goldman Sachs UK. May we have your question, please?
Yes, afternoon. It's Chris Turner from Goldman's. Just two questions from me, please. Firstly, on the plans to expand Eurex into Asia and into some of the CEE countries. If I look at your recent initiatives here, and I'm thinking about the KOSPI options, the Singapore Eurostox initiative and so on, they seem to be partnerships rather than equity stakes along the lines that you did with the Bombay Stock Exchange a few years ago. Has there been a change in your approach here? And then secondly, just following on from the last call and the issue of the hybrid bond and the capital management, I guess my question here is why, if you wanted to do a buyback, did you do it this quarter and I guess not last year when I think already by Q3 you were publicly saying that you were likely to miss the 16 times hurdle? I guess why wait until this quarter? And more broadly, do you expect to undertake more debt buybacks? And if so, you know, how much surplus capital do you think you have to do that? Thank you.
Yeah, on the second question, maybe to answer that right away, obviously the interest cover for the fourth quarter was something that we made public end of last year as let's say a concern, and as you know, we are consistently focused on keeping our excellent rating profile, which meant that we already started to react to offers that we got from market participants for the hybrid last year. It was only 4 million, though, that we could buy back last year. As we said, this is purchases as market price, so it takes someone to offer us a block, if you will. And obviously, with the sort of further development of the financial crisis, there were changes in the risk appetite of investors, so we did see opportunities here unfolding in the first half of this year that, let's say, we took advantage of. But we never, you know, went out and made an offer here to bondholders, as we don't see any reason for a larger scale debt restructuring. This is really very opportunistic market price purchases. And as Gregor said, our appetite for these sort of transactions has obviously declined with the strong sales development, the cost discipline that's been displayed for the first half of back of that improvement of our interest cover numbers.
And with regard to your question of Asia or Eurex strategy, yes, indeed, our primary focus is the cooperation with Asian exchanges here. So we built up new representatives offices in Hong Kong, in Tokyo, and in Singapore. And for us, one key focus is our trader development program. So currently we were able to get 10 new members admitted out of the Asia-Pacific region, and several other firms are in the admission process. So therefore we think we can benefit from this. And with regard to product cooperation, yes, there are two examples. We start in Orchards, our cooperation with Korea, with the Korean exchange, so the KOSPI 200 options, where we cooperate this and where can the customer trade this options outside the trading hours of Korea and latest also our cooperation, what we plan to do with the Bombay Stock Exchange with regard to this Indian Sensex index. That's another example. So indeed, our focus is product cooperation and getting new members out of Asian Pacific region.
Cheers. Thank you.
The next question comes from Martin Peter from LBBW Germany. May we have your question, please?
Good afternoon, Martin Peter, LBBW. I'd like to ask one question regarding the cost item. I think I was pretty much astonished to read that the guidance for the restructuring expenses has been reduced by 40 million roughly. So how can it be only a couple of months ago you announced this program and now you have already such a decrease in expenses? What has happened? And the second part of the question is, if we look ahead in Q3 and Q4, and we might see pretty much lower volumes at Eurex, etc., are you willing to actively reduce the restructuring expenses scheduled for half year two in order to improve the results? Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the second question. So we gave guidance now and said our restructuring expenses will be below 200 million euro. And so far we have booked now 82 million in Q2, 27.8 in Q1. So overall it's 110 million euro, and that's out of the 200 million euro. Basically, with regard to provisions, now we already did the majority of the 200 million. Now we will see some cash outs when we start some profit some process efficiencies, when we invest in IT and changes so far, then you will see the cost in the range when we implement a measure. So far, I do not expect comparable big sums like we have seen now in Q2, because that was just provisions. First question, why do we reduce it now from 240 to 200? So far, we are now some months later in the process, and we started the negotiation with our workers' council. We did not finish this process. We are in the middle of the process, but we see some indication that we need less restructuring expenses as we originally thought in spring.
Okay. Well, probably again on half year two. Do you think, is there any leeway or any space for reducing the restructuring expenses recognized in 2010 if the top line suffers?
No, the restructuring expenses are obviously tied to certain initiatives that we want to achieve under our cost efficiency program, and they are in no way connected to the development, business development in certain segments. These are really two separate things.
I hope that satisfies you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Arnaud Giblat from UBS UK. May we have your question, please?
Hi, thank you. I have just a couple of questions. On cost cutting first, the fact that you are expecting to come below your guidance, just expanding the previous question on the cost guidance on Clearstream, is the fact that you're going to come below your cost guidance, what proportion is that? What proportion of that is coming from you achieving your cost-cutting plan for 2010, 2013 early, and what proportion is it due to you finding extra savings? Second question is on your initiatives in Korea. Could you give us maybe an indication of the level of demand for trading the KOSPI 200 index and the revenues you could draw from that?
Yeah, on the second question on the cost, give any forecast. Obviously, a successful product nationally. In fact, it's one of the most liquid contracts worldwide. What the level of demand will be for the product that we trade then outside the Asian, let's say, trading hours remains to be seen. We have ideas here, but in the end, it's something where we don't have any significant additional cost. We have all the, let's say, operations in place anyway, so it's an incremental opportunity, and we haven't set a public revenue target for this. On the cost guidance, Gregor mentioned that we will give you a better, let's say, idea of how much of the savings anticipated for next year, so the 85 million will already be able to achieve this year. Obviously, you see very first signs of this in the line item volume related costs. And that was a very early question also on this call. If you look sequentially, volume related costs Q1 this year, and then Q2, you will have noticed a slight decline, and that slight decline already by a couple of million is due to contracts that could already be renegotiated, so an efficiency measure that kicks in earlier than we had anticipated, but that process hasn't also fully unfolded yet, so we will wait for Q3 to guide you what exactly out of the 85 we were able to achieve already this year. I think that brings us to the last question for this call.
And the last question comes from Jacob Cruz from Autonomous Research UK. May we have your question, please?
Hi, this is Jacob from Autonomous. Just one question left. I just wondered if you could comment on the BIS rules that came out on Monday, if you see any impact of either the CCP counterparty risk weighting for people using your service, or on the liquidity rules on the custody assets. Thank you.
Well, the short answer to that question is no. We don't see any material impact coming out of these regulations. Obviously, we follow closely what will in the end become reality in terms of these rules. But from our vantage point, and remember, we are a transaction-based business model, so it's not our business model, to take deposits and then invest in risky assets. That's not our business model. Our business model is to process transaction for customers, and for that purpose, we are, being handed certain customer cash ahead of time that we place very conservatively in the money markets. So that's essentially the core of what we do in that respect. We see no material impact from these rules.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for participating on today's call. And if there are any further questions, as always, you can contact us individually. And we hope to see you soon and hear you soon again. Goodbye.